You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Now I'm a union man, amazed at what I am. I say what I think, that the company stinks. Yes, I'm a union man. When we meet in the local hall, I'll be voting with them all. With a hell of a shout, it's out, brothers, out, and the rise of the company's fall. Oh, you don't get me, I'm part of the union. You don't get me, I'm part of the union. You don't get me, I'm part of the union. Till the day I die. Till the day I die.
As a union woman, I'm wise to the lies of the company spies.
And she don't.
Good morning, members and listeners to Radical Radio 3CR. You're with the Fire Up MUA program and you're with the Victorian MUA executive. Rob, Dean and Aaron's about to walk in and I'm Dave.
Dave and Jason, of course, is absent today. He's doing some organising work in down the southwest, down in Portland. There's some work down there that we're trying to get hold of a company there and get them organised.
Is that MCC or?
And that's not the Melbourne Cricket Club either. There's a company there, so we're trying to organise them. So he's down there having a crack at that and also talking to the Cube workforce as well while he's down there.
Of course, Cube Energy are also in Portland.
Cube Energy are down there as well, so there's a bit going on. It's just That's been the advantage of having the organiser, because of the obviously the resources of the branch to be able to get down there on a regular basis to organise. So that's where we're at. As the moon man now joins us, you know, the twilight shift, as we like to call it. But then he'll go, oh, I've got a baby that woke me up at 5 or something. Yeah. Hello, Aaron. How are you?
No, it wasn't the baby. It was just traffic. You know, I got onto the road and there was a bunch of other people going the same direction. Never could have guessed it.
We've heard enough, mate. We defend people like you on the side because they were late for work. They make up the same. They come up with the same bullshit stories.
Our members are never late. Aren't they? No, the time's wrong.
So anyhow, yes, welcome members.
And we want to talk a little bit about safety on the waterfront and safety in our industry. There's been a few incidents recently. One, that death of that guy in the boatyard.
Oh, that was just horrific down on the sort of down where the people are aware of the Vic Dock slipway down there.
He wasn't a member.
No, but that's, I mean, someone didn't go home. 49-year-old male didn't go home to his family. And it's hard to fathom without knowing we don't know the details. We tried to find out. But the reality is if you did a proper JSA, you couldn't possibly have been welding where there was a tank on the other, fuel tank on the other side. But this is what happens when complacency slips in. I know we had in the branch here recently, last week, the week before, we had a HSR refresher course and the importance of HSRs, not just HSRs, but all of us, our responsibility on the job to ensure that when new people come into the industry, that they're shown the right way about doing things. It's not, we don't have accidents and people go home in the same manner they turned up for work. And Dean, there was, just an incident at Patrick's in the last week or so. And I don't
know if you want to share. Yeah, last Friday night on the night shift, from what I understand, mate, we had one of the spreaders
on a straddle
fall. Due to a failure of plant equipment, apparently the gearbox gave way, which then allowed the spreader to fall from, the safe travelling height to the ground. Very, very lucky that there was no one around, mate. Apparently there was a lot of debris and steel fragments and bits and pieces fly off when it hit the ground. Or it even could have caused potentially a rollover of the straddle if the straddle had rolled over it. So It was a pretty dangerous incident, mate. Lucky there was no one hurt or injured. Very lucky. And the HSRs and safety facilitators handled it in the way that they should, in a professional manner, as they do down there. They're extremely good, well-trained. You know, they're world-class HSRs and safety facilitators down at Patrick E. Swanson. So our guys handled it really well. But a bit disappointing, mate. You talk about safety is everyone's responsibility, and there was a reluctance from management to report it to WorkSafe Victoria. They didn't believe that it was deemed as a reportable incident, which is garbage. You know, it was a serious incident. It was plant failure, which is clearly outlined in WorkSafe Victoria's guidelines that is a reportable incident, and it should have been reported. These things get logged. You know, it's not the first time that this has happened. Apparently,
did it finish up being reported?
It did get reported by, I believe it was one of our HSRs, felt that it was the right thing to do and his duty to report it, right? As they do. So, yeah, a little bit disappointing from Patrick management. And, you know, I think there's been some...
I don't know why we're surprised when bosses are bosses. You know? Like,
yeah. Well, it's Patrick's in this instance, but it's not unusual for management, senior management to... not want to report something.
And just want to sweep it under the rug, or deal with it internally. And they're dealing with it internally is, and part of the reason why they don't want to report it is because then it removes capacity of them to say, well, you are the problem. It was you that did it. It was our blokes or our members that caused the mistake, not plant failure, not an issue with their yard. Not an issue with the way their policies and procedures.
Maintenance of the machines. We're not suggesting that these machines weren't maintained, but just that does come into it, you know, and everyone gets stretched. All business gets stressed. We're around maintenance and stuff. Well, we'll do that at this many hours instead of this many hours, and instead just to get through because of a shortage of labour or a shortage of, available, parts or whatever it might be. But I think the important thing that we're trying to stress here is that safety on the job is everything. And we need to make sure that all of our, not just our HSRs, but all of our members are out there doing the right thing and making sure that everyone goes home. So we've been very fortunate in the branch to, there hasn't been a death on the waterfront now for over 10 years, and we want to keep it that way. We don't want to ever have to knock on someone's door and tell someone's not coming home. So, and that's why the reporting of incidents to WorkSafe, because that's the only way we get better at all of our systems is through encompassing the bodies that are there to assist us. Right?
Correct.
You know, so members, it's everyone's responsibility, and in particular, we want to stress that I reckon it's. The longer you've been there, the more responsibility you have to make sure that people are doing the right thing. And good on the HSR for reporting that to WorkSafe, because that's what it's there for. There's guidelines there. When this happens, report. And that's what has to happen.
Of course, we need the regulator to also be on board and to support the workers, like the OSHMIA Act, the OH&S Maritime Industry Act, which looks after seafarers at sea. The MUA is doing a lot of work around lobbying government to get that act improved, because HSRs at sea don't have the same powers.
Explain that, Dave, because explain why that is.
Yeah, HSRs at sea don't have the same powers as HSRs under the OH&S Act, and that needs to be improved. Yeah, on shore, so on the sea. And also, you know, Australian seafarers working on foreign flagged vessels are not covered under even the OSHMIA Act. Which is outrageous.
No, if they're working on a flagged vessel from Panama, they're covered by Panama Safety Act.
Yeah.
So
it's
absolutely insane. Working in our waters, on our coast, doing trade back and forth from Australian port and subject to laws of Liberia. How does that work?
It's an Australian crewed vessel and it's alongside, you're covered. But once it moves outside X amount of 7 miles?
No, it's once it's off the berth, really. Because once
it's off the berth, it's not covered by the act of
the state that they're in.
The state that they're in.
Well, it is complicated, our industry. I mean, our wharfies, when they, you know, when the ship's tied up alongside, it's technically a Victorian workplace, and our workers are covered under the OH&S Act, but the international seafarers are not necessarily covered. AMSA looks after them. So when there's an incident with an international seafarer, you know, it's a tussle. AMSA and WorkSafe sit there and go, well, who's going to take responsibility for this?
Like that Spider-Man meme where they're all pointing at each other.
Yeah. And there are reasons why these shipping companies use foreign flags, and like Aaron pointed out, whether it be Liberia or Panama or Malta, you know, all these countries that don't have as stringent regulations in relation to health and safety in particular. And these companies use these flag states as basic loopholes or cheap coverage and to get away with some of the more stringent legislation that if they were national flag vessels. It can be quite...
And it's taken a long time to get to where we are now with the lobbying around change to the Act. But it just shows how it doesn't happen overnight. We don't go and lobby and say, that it's done. It takes years to get this change. But I feel like there's some positive movement now on it.
Well, and another area that the MUA is working on is getting ships cranes to be a high-risk license. Like, I mean, what piece of machinery can you drive in today's modern-day society without having a high-risk license? Yet our members go to work every day on different ships working in cranes and they don't require a license. It's outrageous.
It is, and that's, once again, that has been going on for a number of years.
Oh, over 20 years we've been lobbying around this.
And we're still, like, when I say no, Claude, we are closer. But it's not like we can see the finishing post. There's still a lot of work to go, unfortunately. But that's, you know, particularly on cranes that are on moving platforms. You know, it's very different to operating a crane. But it's a ship's crane or a gantry crane or a mobile crane that's a wharf. So there's so many different levers to it, but the MUA is working tirelessly to try and get that crane licensing finalised. But it's not around the corner.
The amount of work we put into getting this stuff done is incredible, right? And it's still phenomenal that we still can't see the goalposts. And you've got to think, why is that? Like, what is the where is the pushback in that? And it's because companies don't want it. Yeah.
The companies have been pushing back on it.
Yeah.
That's where the problem comes.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I mean. And like, and there's significant pushback from companies, and simply because it's going to cost them. And there's a cost. They will say that safety is their number one priority and this and that and all this bullshit. But really, it doesn't matter how often you write it on our shirts or write it on the side of the ship. It just comes down to whether or not this is going to cost them.
Yeah.
And our lives have a dollar figure on it for them.
Absolutely. So there's still a lot of work to do there, and we'll continue to work in that area until the industry does catch up with probably the rest of the world, the rest of industry in Australia. And call out to our HSRs to
do a great job
and keep up the good work and keep those workplaces safe. All right, we're going to go to our first song.
Give a little bit of an explanation on the song. Let me clear, members, we're a team here, but you chose this.
It's by an independent folk protest singer in America, David Rovics. He actually created the music, but
tell
it is...
Timbers, David,
it's
AI generated.
It is AI Sumo. Like, Sumo, they call it, but it's the first song is called How Do You Know They're Lying? Hope you enjoy it.
Was on, started by the USA, but you wouldn't know this if you listening today to any mainstream media all across the West, the stuff that passes these days for the free press, from conservative to liberal,
It's just a lot of bunk. As I listen, I just wonder who believes this junk. But then, like someone said, repeat falsehoods enough. You can get folks thinking all kinds of stupid stuff, like what I heard this morning about the Hormuz Strait. You'd never know this war was started by the United States. You'd never know the US was the one that violated the memorandum, where it was very clearly stated that Iran would make arrangements for ships along their borders, that they'd be proceeding under Iranian orders. They say there was confusion on the air and in my feed. 14 points would seem to be too much for them to read. How do you know they're lying or just trying to deceive, to provide the propaganda so you know what to believe? Wherever you may be, at home or in your car, it's when you turn on your radio and tune into NPR. They say they're trading strikes, whatever that's supposed to mean. Hearing this reporting, it's impossible to glean that the US started this war and the US broke the peace, that the US is the aggressor here, and if these wars might ever cease, it will be because the politicians and the press aren't controlled by corporations and other governments, no less. When we have actual freedom for the media, we'll know and we'll all wonder how we got this far into the shit show. How do you know they're lying or just trying to deceive, to provide the propaganda so you know what to believe? Wherever you may be, at home or in your car, it's when you turn on your radio. Tune into NPR. But the world war is on, started by the USA.
Welcome back, members. What did you think of that AI sumo song?
Yeah, okay. It's not on my playlist. I've only got about two bands on my playlist, Stones and AC/DC. So I don't expand much further than that, mate.
No, there you go. All right, we're back with the Fire Up Anyway program. We're going to go into a bit of an industrial conversation. Dean, you're been negotiating with a company called ACFS, who have hit the media this week.
We have, mate. It's been all over the press. ACFS has recently had an external administrator appointed to run the business.
How big were your claims, mate?
Send a company to the wall before you got an agreement.
Oh, I think there was a lot of this happening beforehand, mate. But
I reckon our members' claims were would have cost less than one of the bloody houses they were buying up in Sydney.
I think so, mate. I think our members' claims were probably less than the holiday that one of the owners was on his Instagram over in Mykonos party, and the party boy of Mykonos is what was reported in the Financial Review. Well,
I only know one Greek word, and I probably not shouldn't say it. There's good alliteration with Mykonos, who it would be.
And it was reported in the Financial Review then that there were several companies chasing funds, unpaid bills, to the tune of around $60 million. Whether we've seen this coming or not, it's left our members in a real shit situation. There's no other word that I can use for it. But the main concern of the union at the moment is obviously, getting the agreement done will take second place at the moment. Our main concern is ensuring that our members' entitlements are all maintained and they're getting paid. They're getting super paid and all the rest of it. So it's a pretty stressful time. For all our members down at ACFS, who are a great bunch of members. It's just really unfortunate, and that's probably a very light word to use, where we've got billionaires in this country rorting workers, and I can say that wholeheartedly. This company, we've taken the task over not paying superannuation contributions, which we took them to court and won. And like I said, companies chasing him for $60 million plus in unpaid debts.
That's not
transurban.
This didn't just happen though, Dean, did it?
No, this hasn't happened.
The business has had a history of racking up debt and not paying.
Yeah, but we've had this report.
So we've had reports of what machines being come on, they fix them, then they tag them out so they can't use them until they get paid.
Yeah, that's
just that's the stuff we hear.
This has been going on for years, mate. Our members constantly report back that businesses that use or ACF use businesses are on stop credit, whether it be mechanics fixing forklifts or tyre changes or, you know, fuel suppliers, people fixing their yards because they're fucked.
Toilet paper
down to basic toilet paper and amenity stuff that people just won't supply because they're not getting paid. It's outrageous.
You're the George Costanza of the group, fascinated with toilet paper. I think the important part here, the important part is for our members to know that you, the branch, and national office are working really hard with our legals to ensure that what they're doing and when they're going to work, they're getting paid their entitlements, super. Everything's being looked after, and about to go to conciliation today around a parbo, because we're at the pointy end of the negotiation there.
Yeah.
And we'll continue to fight for their conditions. We're not going to, our claims don't lessen, but the branch and yourself and Nationals are all in behind that workforce and helping them through what can only be described as a very unique situation. I don't think I've seen a business go into administration while we're halfway through bargaining at any point in time. But no, is that a feather? It might be a feather in your cap.
Not a good one,
for the membership.
Not a good one, that's for sure.
If it turns sour. But so I think that is important that the membership know that we are working. Definitely. This isn't, we're not just being led by the nose by the correspondence that the business is sending their workforce, which I have not read, but I've heard about it. And it is absolute fantasy to think what they're being fed.
Yeah.
But I think if they listen to yourself as their official and the branch and national officer, we'll get through this and the other side.
Okay? Yeah, we will.
But we've got your back.
We will. And we do have their back. You know, a little bit of positive out of it all. You know, at this point, there'd be no redundancies. The administrators aren't looking at getting rid of people. You could say it's business as usual, but it's not really business as usual.
Well, Gump's nickname is the party boy in Mykonos. I don't think it's the workforce of the court that's spending a lot of money.
No,
if that's a,
no, definitely.
If that's a thing.
There are businesses pulling out of ACFS left, right and centre. And Patrick has been one of them that I've had reports that businesses have stopped.
We'll
dealing with them, but we'll continue to work with them, mate. And again, our members are at the forefront of where we need to be, and that's our main focus in ensuring that their entitlements and everything else continues on. And we want them to come out of this. We don't want the business to go under. We want our members to continue to be working. You know, they've all got families and you know, mortgages and everything else that we've all got. So it is a shit situation, but we'll work through it.
So one business that is going all right is one of the Bass Strait traders, Straitlink, and we had a workplace meeting there with Aaron running that the other day.
Yeah, we've kicked off their EBA campaign, so their EA expires at the end of this year, and so we had the first stop work meeting of all of our members to endorse a log of claims, and those log of claims were endorsed unanimously. For the most part, and we'll be seeking some pretty significant changes around work-life balance and people's ability to spend time with their families and things like that coming out of this EA. So we're hopeful. We've written to the company this week, and we're hopeful to meet with them soon. They're currently in the process of doing their ship EA for both the masters and our guys. And so the company have in the past told us that they wanted to wait to get those done before they kicked off the stevedore one. But we're going to be requesting that they start earlier. We think that they're a big enough company. They should be able to walk and chew gum. Hopefully we'll kick off there and have more to report in the coming months.
The good thing about that meeting, I felt, was the debate around the locker claims, and so that was really important. It's all about the membership. We just get to go and fight for those. And so I thought when running through the locker claims, any debate on it, it was had, and then we reach a consensus position, and then on we go. And I thought that was a really, really good meeting from that point of view, which that's the way it should be, right? That's the way it should be anyway.
Yeah, it's
a good workforce, good committee again. Our committee's once again just outstanding in the work they do.
Yep, and it is good when we get either opposing or complementary ideas that come in with the claims from the floor. All the claims came from the floor in the first instance, but then as part of the discussion and the debate, you kind of fill them out in a way that really highlights the creativity of our members and the ability for them to kind of take an unknowingly class perspective from things, because it's about the redistribution of wealth from companies, and that's what we're going to achieve out of this.
All right, just a quick report on Switzer. Those first meetings took place in Sydney last week. They're fairly complicated negotiations with three unions sitting at the table with the company. That's the AMOU, the Officers Union, AIMPI, the Engineers Union, and, of course, us, the leaders in the workplace, the MUA. So, that's the first meeting of quite a few. The EA doesn't run out until June 30 next year, I think's the date, and... So we're getting in early.
So, Dave, would that be an indication from the company that they don't want to have the shit fight that basically, in a nutshell, that we had last time?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, members, people might remember they threatened to lock out the workforce last time. And I'll tell you what, our members do remember that they went 3 years without a pay rise. So, you can imagine they're trying to fix that up this time. So there's a bit of work to be done there, but early stages yet. We'll see how it goes. All right, that brings us towards the end of the show. We're going to thank everyone for listening.
Yes, thank you, members. We hope you have a great day. The next time we speak to you, the footy finals will be underway. And, Dave, Bulldogs, not so good. Not so good.
Not so good.
But we're not talking about the Tigers and the Storm. You've had a shock in here too, Dana.
250 years ago, cards were played. An independent country, you know, the revolution made. The USA was free to expand to the West, to break every treaty, to call itself the best. Once they reached the Pacific, the Americans began attacking other countries, from China to Japan, from the African savannah to the Russian plains, from Mexico to Panama, sucking up the veins. What might keep the USA from lighting the world on fire? Who will stop the empire? Truth that stopped a lot, losing wars left and right. Unbeatable, it's not, it's beaten all the time, despite all the money and resources it can deploy. Send its mercenary forces to demolish and destroy. Losing wars while leaving millions dead, with every parent grieving or just seeing red. But however oft repeated, they just do it again. However oft defeated, the world wonders when. What might keep the USA from lighting the world on fire? Who will stop the empire? Now the Monroe Doctrine is everywhere. A world to control or a planet to share. The choice faced by all, as stark as can be. Planetary downfall or a society that can manage to survive and throw off the yoke while we're still alive, before we're all broken, while there's air in our gills and bases intact, while there's free will and time to act. What might keep the USA from lighting the world on fire? Stop the empire. empire. What might keep the USA from lighting the world on fire? Who will stop the empire?
Public transport's great.
What's not great is that unless you've got a radio with you, you can't listen to 3CR when you're on it.
Until now. The Community Radio Plus app lets you listen to us wherever you are.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.